and welcome to the All Japan Women's Destiny podcast. I'm your host, JD. Welcome to another episode as we go through the history of All Japan Women's Professional Wrestling through the classics episodes that you can find on various places of the internet. I vastly encourage to follow along and learn and enjoy the history of this just awesome women's wrestling promotion of the past. This is a spin-off in conjunction with the Red Leaf Retrocast. That is the proper episode where these come from. We hope you enjoy our audio and our discussions over the various wrestlers and the matches in which we go through the ages. If you like what you hear and you want more content, please consider checking out the Patreon. That is patreon.com/redleafretrocast, all one word, where we also cover LLPW, various other women's wrestling promotions of the past, and the project that the whole reason it exists is the Joshi 2010s journey, where we go through coming out of the dark ages of Joshi professional wrestling and really learning and having fun with wrestlers that we're very familiar with to this day to ones that we may have missed out on. I hope you enjoy the audio you're about to hear covering AJW. And if you want more, please, again, consider signing up to the Patreon and leaving us reviews over at iTunes, Spotify, and the like, all your favorite podcasting outlets in which you listen to AJW and the Red Leaf Retrocast. Enjoy. And it's time for that All Japan Women Destiny. We're here to go over three classic episodes. Classics 106, 107, 108. 106 took place on February 15th, 1995. Kind of your basic house show, gearing up for the one-night tag tournament for the vacant tag titles here in 1995, as Double Inoue vacated the tag titles at the beginning of the year because they wanted to be champions number 100. And that was the story, and they built up to the big March 21st show in Osaka at Osaka Castle Hall to try to drum up a lot of interest along and in this time period where Onita, Misawa and company, and a lot of Keiji Muto, a lot of these companies are coming together for a big Tokyo Dome show. Brought on by, I think it was Weekly Pro Wrestling, because there was also the Go Gundam magazine Tokyo Dome show, and basically we're just doing super shows, where they're getting $5-6 million gates. Scalpers are selling at the time for over $1,000 to get into these dome shows, and it's essentially English writers, Meltzer and The Torch and whatnot, was basically calling it the WrestleMania for Japan. I'm not sure why they geared up that way, but WrestleMania was taking place during the same time, during this in 95. That's where we were heading. And for All Japan Women to have dumped LLPW and FMW around this time makes it interesting for how they're going to follow up. And really, they're playing a little isolationist game temporarily here. So we go to the March 27th Observer, where FMW is doing 7,000 seat shows. The Tokyo Dome show on April 2nd is announced. UFC is now in full force. It's a huge cultural kind of shift in the pro wrestling world, and it's really reaching a bullet point here with things like Pancrase and IWA with deathmatch wrestling is also happening. So we got All Japan Women doing their thing on the show. We have a JWP super match, 8-man tag, and then we have Shinobu Kandori from LLPW doing a goofy UFC fight. Which, if you listen to the LLPW reviews, you know what happens on that one. So I'm trying to pull up Oh, here we go. Okay, so that's what the March 27th and a few other publications were doing at that time. And then we had, we're going to the April 10th Observer, where it covers what that dome show meant. And what happened was the JWP match actually outshined everything, along with a realization of who was the most over in the country right now. Between Onita getting 65,000 people to his retirement show and Deal or 50,000, whichever it was. The All Japan wrestlers, as in Misawa, Kobashi, and company, put on the best matches, but they're not the biggest drawing cards. They're kind of repeating themselves in matches over and over again, while New Japan continues to do better at the box office, despite having, we'll call it, lesser in-ring stars. They are selling more. And we kind of got the female version of that, where JWP, whom are lesser stars than the AJW wrestlers, they really showed out on the show. Especially, in my opinion, the Hikari Fukuoka and Devil Masami really showed out. And then you got your kind of powerhouse favorites, Dynamite Kansai, Cutie Suzuki and Kandi Okotsu doing junior things together. You get the idea. So that was fun to see. So let's go on to this tag show. 1100 in Kagoshima, Japan, on February 15th. I can't say the show was, like, incredibly great, but we got some decent stuff here. Asari beat up rookie Yukishina. Yoshida and Rita Mata, I'm really liking this team. They defeated Utops, that's Tomoko Watanabe and Kumiko Maekawa. It's exactly what it is in your head. For once, Mariko Yoshida was not treated like a geek. She gets to come out on top. You had Toshio Yamada and Mima Shimoda having like a prelude tag against Kairi Ito and Suzuka Minami as we're gearing up for Suzuka Minami's retirement. That's coming up in a month or so. And then Aja Kong and Etsuka Mita had what I thought a boring match. Aja Kong defeats her. There was really no tease of the DVD. Because Mita is definitely strong enough where she can lift Kong up, but they just didn't really go to a lot of those spots. Kong looked like she was conserving energy a lot of the time. This was not their best showing. And then the main event, we had Toyota and Hota teaming up against Double Inoue, 20-minute match. I thought this was excellent. This was your prelude tag again of Double Inoue and Toyota going against each other, and Double Inoue losing before the tournament, I thought was an interesting booking decision to really keep you guessing over can they go to distance kind of situation there. And Hota looked like she was at her best again. There was that couple months span there where wasn't feeling what she was doing. She's starting to work a lot more stiff consistently to really be reminiscent of that bloody hand match that happened at the beginning of 94, which really got me kind of thinking about Hota differently. But she's never really had that spark, that same motivational spark again. And Toyota is an absolute disaster around the ring right now. It's quite hilarious. She is jumping all over the place, missing half her shit. A lot of it looks cool when she does land it, but really it got to the point where she was botching so many stuff in this match that Takako and Kyoko were just trying to ground her. Maybe that was the strategy of the match, but whatever the sequence, once they started doing that and it would build up to Toyota's bigger, you know, springboard type moves and the constant teasing of Hota's big heel kick situations into Toyota's JOC and suplexes and whatnot. That's when we finally got a match down. And the average age of wrestlers on this show, 24 years old. I thought that was a wild stat. So ultimately, that was Classics 106. I'm kind of glad I didn't dedicate a full episode to that because we'd have been in and out in like 5 minutes. We move on to the bigger show, which covered two classic spans, which is the One Night Tag Tournament. Okay? So if you like a bunch of 10-minute undercard matches, really getting people over in the same way and the same structure, then the beginning will be just fine for you. Okay? So I'll go through. Let's see. We had an opener, Tamada Asari, Yoko Takahashi, and Masai Watanabe Genki. Defeat Tomoko Yukishina, Yoshiko Tamura, and Nobuo Endo, 7 minutes. It's a rookie match. And Chipiro Asari is unfortunately relegated to this because of her size. Kind of sucks, because I would have liked to see her in this tournament instead of Kari Ito. Or anyone else, for that matter. Well, no, not anyone else, but I could have done with Asari in this tournament. Well, we got a quick dose of double in a way, Kyoko and Takakao defeating Suzu Konami and Reggie Bennett in 12 minutes. Bennett has actual gear now. Now she looks like someone out of American Gladiators that isn't on steroids. So it's quite funny to watch her thwomp around the ring. And this was to immediately establish double in a way as the force in the mat, in the tournament. We should have a situation where they reach the finals or get upset in the semis. That's what they're teasing. But as soon as you see what matches are ahead, you can immediately tell kind of what was going to happen throughout the tournament, with the exception of one team, and they're up next. It was Aja Kong and Mariko Yoshida. Yes, that Yoshida has been kind of treated like a geek jobber since coming back from injury after all that time. Well, they defeated Toshio Yamada and Yumika Hota 18 minutes, and this is really what I was talking about with Yamada. Because on paper, I would have thought Hota and Yamada were just going to destroy Yoshida and come away with this with the win, as you have Aja Kong have an out. She doesn't have to pull double duty, because within the week, it's going to be her and Manami Toyota gunning for that red belt title. Are they going to do something more with Manami Toyota and Aja Kong on this show? Maybe. Or was it a missed opportunity? So yeah, 18 minutes. I thought Kong was phenomenal against both Hota and Yamada. Kong and Hota have excellent chemistry with each other. They really know how to run and gun. Yamada, this goes into my theory that they're kind of done with her. As soon as she got kind of passed up by definitely Manami Toyota, her tag partner, but Aja Kong's been put over as something at the top. You have Mita and Shimoda as a strong tag team, so that kind of puts her out there. You have the rising Saki Asagawa that they're willing to do a lot of different things with. And then Hota's really coming to her own, and she's doing better than Yamada is right now. So Yamada is... she's on the way. She's on out. She's on the outside looking in, because everybody's passing her by, and she's not really stepping up her game to the next level. That's what I'm seeing. Even though she's still really good, she's given me a lot of Momo Watanabe type vibes right now in placement on the card. LCO, Mita and Shimoda defeat the visiting Lady Apache and La Felina, whom I believe is Diabolica in CMLL around this time. I believe that's the same person. We're going to go with yes. We're going to do that. That's what I'm saying. And Lady Apache, and especially, looks excellent. Felina looked great. I thought this was one of the better matches, but it was only 10 minutes, so, you know, a 1 out of 3, 2 out of 3 situation. Mita and Shimoda, at this point in time, we've seen so many of their LCO tag matches that are between 8 and 12 minutes, and we know what they're going to do in this match. They're going to have a beginning period of heat. They're going to set up their key tag moves, and then they'll go home. Manami Toyota and Blizzard Yuki. Yes, Saki Asagawa is back in a mask. So I looked this up. So initially, about a month after the Tokyo Dome, where they gave her this character, and then the manga and everything wasn't selling so well, apparently they had like a re-release of like the cartoon and the manga. And so they put the Blizzard Yuki gimmick back on her, even though they hadn't done it in about a month and a half, because they wanted to match up with advertising. So there was a second release of it, and that explains why they kind of put the mask on her for this tournament that drew 8,500 people to Castle Hall here in Osaka, which but at this point in time, it's well known that the Matsunagas are not happy with the attendances in 1995 with All Japan Women, especially coming off the last number of years where it was Bull Nakano and company getting 14, 16,000 people into Yokohama Arena, and the beginning of the interpromotional warfare matches. Great angles produce great results, and what All Japan Women's lacking right now are those angles to produce any results. Currently, their ideas, if it doesn't involve international or interpromotional stuff, is very bland of great women's wrestling, but without the background substance. They're still getting 5,000 plus people to these shows, but in the Matsunaga's minds, that's a failure, right? And All Japan Pro Wrestling isn't doing that much better at this point in time. They can still sell out the Budokan when they go there for things like Tag League and whatnot. And I'd have to do a deeper dive, but it's very comparable. And it's being commonly said that All Japan Pro Wrestling is struggling with tickets, while places like FMW on the back of Onita's retirement and New Japan are doing quite well during this point in time. That said, the Toyota Blizzard Yuki combo were fantastic. What doesn't do it for me in this match in the 13 minutes is Jaguar Yokota and Asuka are too grounded. And it comes across as a relic of the past of this kind of match where they're not adjusting to a new style. Jaguar Yokota is doing better than Lioness Asuka right now because she can do a lot of Lucha Libre-esque moves and still keep up, but she hasn't changed her gear. She's really coming across as 10 years behind the times. And Asuka is too grounded and kind of boring. She has her big swing still. Doesn't look as good as Kyoko anyways right now. Not really. Not up to that standard. But you get the idea. And the quote-unquote veteran team loses. Not something you get today. And they're calling them Raijin Corps. Bison Kimura defeats Kairi Ito in a very boring 14-minute match. I cannot stand Kairi Ito in any sort of iteration, from her Peter Pan days in that gear to singles matches like this. Bison Kimura still has quite a bit of rust, seemingly, to get off here. She needs weaponry to make these matches interesting. And what was an absolute disaster was this martial arts shoot match. Fumiko Ishimoto defeats Kumiko Maekawa. It's fucking back. And I hate it. I hate these things. They're so boring. They're terrible. People getting shoot punched. And then they try to make a farce of it with, like, draws and downs and whatever. And from here to the end of the show, this rocked. Double Inoue defeats Yoshida and Aja Kong, 16 minutes. I really think there was a missed opportunity here with booking Manami Toyota and Blizzard Yuki to beat this team. And you know, a week later, you're doing Kong Toyota. Manami Toyota can get the pin over Mayuki Yoshida and talk shit to Aja Kong. Or hell, pin Aja Kong. Regardless of the booking thoughts and the format, the match rocked. And this is how I thought the other match was going to go, where Yoshida gets the shit kicked out of her from the bigger duo. And they did that in this match. And Kong really held her own. It was a lot of Mayuki Yoshida jumping around the ring while Kyoko and Takako just slapped the shit out of her. A good match, 2 out of 3 rec. And another 2 out of 3 rec is the 20 minutes LCO against Blizzard Yuki Manami Toyota match. Saki Asagawa and Manami Toyota is crack to me. They are so good. Blizzard Yuki doing all her, like, T-bone and Uranagi suplexes, setting up into Manami Toyota's crazy drop kicks and moonsaults and the like. Excellent match, very high energy, 2 out of 3, little better than the match prior. And the main event, so Manami Toyota and Blizzard Yuki go back-to-back in matches. So they're trying, they see what happened the couple years ago with the Hokuto and Toyota and the tag league and the double match showdown. They saw how successful and buzzworthy that got and became a cult classic type of show with the matches. They've now gone to this well twice since then, in same tag tournament style, where a team will go in back-to-back matches to create more drama. And now I think we've definitely seen them go to the well too many times. This is why I think they could have done... Well, I guess that would have set up Double Inoue going back-to-back in matches here. No, that would have created the same level of drama and built up. So I think they were kind of up Schitt's Creek without a paddle here, where no matter what, a semifinal team was going to end up in the finals. But I guess it also gives Manami Toyota and Yuki an out since they lost, that they had to face, they had to do two matches in a row like this in short fashion. So Blizzard Yuki, Hasegawa, and Toyota were in there for a good 36, 37 minutes straight with very little rest just for Double Inoue to come out again. This match rocked. Full three, 4.25, 4.5 star type match over on the old Observer. I think he went, Mr. Dave, I don't think he actually watched this show, did he? Let's see here. No, he watched the weekly Pro Tokyo Dome show and went 4.75 on the JWP match and 4.5 on the All Japan match. Oh, yeah. Two terrible men. All Japan women just doing terrible to follow JWP in that sense. Crazy. So Double Inoue, and this was straight up one fall, which I really appreciate. It made it even more dramatic. Blizzard Yuki looked absolutely outstanding in here, hanging in there. And Kyoko and Takako make such an amazing duo at this point in time. They become one of my favorite tag teams to watch. Everything they do seem to hit, at least in this point in time, in this era. And I want to see more. And I'm glad they won the tag titles back. It had them finish the story of them wanting to be champions 100. Simple enough, it got them over. They got almost 10,000 people to this tag show. And now we're gearing up for the big singles match show with Toyota and Kong. But the turnaround's so fast. You know, scheduling seems to follow upper management scheduling Rossi Ogawa's booking or whomever at the time, or people doing a committee of some whatever source you want to use, or whatever you want to believe. Regardless, when it comes to a lot of these companies that Ogawa's in, it seems like the schedule is always against him, okay? And against the wrestlers. Luckily, we have some younger talent showing up on these cards now, but we're going to be gearing up for, I believe, two retirements. I believe Yamada's retirement isn't too far. I know Suzuki Minami's is right around the corner, and I don't think Saki Asagawa lasts much longer, and then we're going to really see how filling out these pieces of what All Japan can do in this post-Big Egg world. But ultimately, you know, I think it's a dumb booking decision to vacate the titles the way that Double Inoue did, but for them to come away back as champions and going through this tournament, you know, it at least doesn't make them look stupid. It brought some drama to it. I think this is less vacuum booking than I initially thought. Now that I have full context, I think it was more successful than I thought how it was going to turn out. And there we have it. Our next show is going to be Manami Toyota Aja Kong for the title. Queendom Victory. So I will title this Queendom Success, with all three classic episodes combined. This was fun. This was good. Hope you enjoyed All Japan Women Destiny. Consider subscribing over on All Japan Women Destiny. You get those Joshi 2010's Journey episodes for free on delay. And if you want to support more of the Joshi 2010's Journey, head on over to Patreon and join the very low tier to at least support the Google Drive access and everything. Just came out with the 2012 in Joshi review. Includes matches of the year, wrestlers of the year, review over Ribbon Mania from 2012. Very interesting year for 2012. Head on over there, check it out. And we move on throughout All Japan in 1995.